Welcome in to Talking Terps, a show which covers University of Maryland basketball and football. Talking Terps is part of BSL Radio. Baltimore Sports and Life is dedicated to analysis and discussion on the Baltimore Orioles, the Baltimore Ravens, and the Terrapins. The site has a team of writers providing coverage of those teams and houses live streaming content weekly. Join the conversations on the message board, like BSL on Facebook, and follow BSL on Twitter.
Welcome into Talking Terps. I'm your host, Zach Kiesel. Talking Terps is brought to you courtesy of Mercer Floor and Home Carpet One. Mercer is a third-generation family business established in 1959 and located on Main Street in beautiful historic downtown Westminster, Maryland of Carroll County. For all of your flooring needs, think Mercer. So Maryland's basketball team doing a lot better than the last time we talked about 2 weeks ago. Had won four games in a row until last night when they lost a tight one to Michigan State. And they've got seven games left in the regular season before the Big Ten tournament starts. Pat Donahue couldn't be with us today, but I've got Mike Popovic here to help me break everything down. Mike, how's it going?
Hey, going well. Going well. And since we've last talked, the basketball team really gotten on a roll, and we got plenty to talk about with them. Some late-night basketball the last couple of games we were talking off-air about that. Some 9 o'clock starts on the East Coast that make it tough for those of us who are up early in the morning. Well, the one game was a Saturday game, so not as bad, but the Tuesday night game, that was a little rough for those of us that are up early.
It's the Big Ten scheduling, and we've talked about Kevin Willard has had some issues with that. Maryland's team, they actually stayed on the road for the last two games. They traveled out to Minnesota on Saturday, played a late 9 o'clock Eastern game, and then the game against Michigan State, a quick turnaround Tuesday night, so they actually stayed out there in the Midwest. Not sure. I know Kevin mentioned that he took responsibility for the slow start they had. Michigan State got up out to the 15-0 lead to start this game. Yeah. But I think the slow legs, probably a part of that. He said they had a really bad day of practice on Monday. And it can't be easy taking such an extended road trip away from home. You know, you lack some comfort despite the Minnesota game being such a blowout. But, Mike, just talk a little bit about the last five games. What's really stood out to you as the primary reason or reasons why this team has really surged? Because, you know, the last episode we had about 2 weeks ago, it was looking pretty bad. They'd gone on a pretty bad stretch of losing a lot of games, relatively competitive, but what stood out to you in this most recent stretch?
Well, a couple of things. Most recently, the minimal amount of turnovers. And in the Michigan State game, they had eight. So that's and five in the first half, but just three in the second half. So that stands to reason. But they're keeping themselves in games. When you get down by 15 like that, like they did, to only have eight turnovers in total, that's a big help. But they've minimized turnovers. We talked about a concern about rebounding being an issue coming into this season. But if you take a look back in the majority of the games that they've played this year, they've actually out-rebounded their opponents. And in about 85% of those games, they've won those games. Now, last night was one of those rare exceptions where they actually out-rebounded Michigan State by one. Sparty known for their rebounding prowess. Maryland out-rebounded them. It's a rare occurrence that they lost the game, though, even though they out-rebounded. So minimal turnovers. They're out-rebounding more teams than you expect. They're getting some production off the bench that they didn't necessarily get early in the year. Patrick Amelian has certainly afforded himself well. And then you just see that the effort plays, the defense leading to good offense where you're getting transition buckets, but they're also, for the most part, and I say that for the most part, they're attacking the basket, they're drawing fouls, and they're not getting too crazy from three-point range. That said, though, you go back a couple of games ago, even though they won, I think it was the Indiana game, they launched up like 24 threes, and they were better as the game went on. They did very well against Minnesota. But, you know, for the most part, though, they've at least balanced out any lack of three-point shooting with attacking the basket and not getting away from the two-point shots in the free throw line, where they've also been very efficient at the free throw line as well. So there's been really a lot of factors, Zach, that have played into it.
Yeah, I think the defense is the first thing that stands out. And really, they've been solid defensively all year, with the exception of that UCLA game. That's kind of the outlier as far as...
And the Michigan game, yeah.
Right, as far as blowouts go, you're right. So you take those two games out, and they've been very competitive in all of these games. And defense is really what's traveled well when they play on the road. The shooting has been horrific on the road, and that's one of the main reasons why their record on the road is so bad. You saw it again last night against Michigan State, 3 of 22 from three. Now, to their credit, they, like you mentioned, they balanced it out enough with good defense, forcing turnovers, rebounding, and attacking the rim enough that they were able to keep the game tight until the last couple seconds. But at the same time, you know, you feel like this team is one or two shooters away from really competing. It feels like this year they're getting good looks, and you saw it last night. They were getting a lot of really good looks. They just weren't hitting any of them. And so it just seems like this team's one or two shooters away. You do have a couple freshman shooters coming in who are supposed to be pretty good, but you'd like to see Kevin Willard attack the transfer market, get one guy. Of course, we thought we were getting that this year in Don Carey, and he's been bad, so bad, in fact, that he was benched the entire second half last night. Ian Martinez played all 20 minutes.
Yeah, he's been unreliable. That said, though, he's had some games this year, but that wasn't one of them on Tuesday night in that game against Michigan State. And you take a look at that game, and look, they shoot 30.5%, 30.5%, 30.1%, somewhere in that range on the season from three. So they're not very good. They're one of the worst, if not the worst, in the Big Ten. But last night they shot, 13% from three. Tuesday night, 13% from three. And they just needed just two more. You know, you make two more threes, it was a five-point deficit. And they had – and look, Michigan State is the best three-point shooting defensive team in the Big Ten, and yet Maryland got some good open looks that they simply did not hit. And so they were 17-18% below their average per game and average on the season. So you go back and take a look, and there's certain other areas you could take a look at, but that's really the one that stands out because they out-rebounded Michigan State by one. They also went to the free throw line and were effective there as they were over the last couple of games. They had less turnovers than Sparty did in that Tuesday night matchup. You go through a lot of the stats. They had four players in double-digit figures in that game that Michigan State only had two. Maryland had four. So you go through it, and it really does come down to that three-point shooting really stands out. I thought that there were a couple of foul plays that were egregious. I thought two of the fouls called on Julian Reiss, including the one that was a technical foul. Yeah. That Hauser got to go to the line and shoot two. The dead ball technical, Hauser got to go to the line and shoot two, and then Michigan State got the ball. I'm trying to remember on that possession if they scored or not. I'm not sure they do, but that's 2 points that they gave Michigan State right there. Then there was an offensive foul on him trying to post up against a defender, and I don't remember who the defender was, but the defender was bigger and stronger than Reiss was, and I just let him play, let him body up. They didn't do that there. So there were a couple of calls that were certainly not very good in this one. But Maryland's defense, again, coming through. You know, you go on the road against Sparty, and they're a very good three-point shooting team. A couple of guys of 40% or over 40%, including Hauser, Tyson, the other one. And I think as a team, they're 36%. So, you know, to go in there and only give up, 64 points or so, very impressive. But, yeah, that three-point shooting, that just really stands out. And, yeah, the 15-0 deficit as well. But to their credit, they kept playing, and it was way too early for them to just mail it in, even though they got down by a margin you don't want to get down by.
Yeah, despite Michigan State's recent struggles overall, they've been really good at home this year. I think they've only lost twice at home all year, hadn't lost in almost a month, I think. So they're really tough at home. It seems like anytime you play a Tom Izzo coach team, there's going to be some questionable calls that go against your team because he works the hell out of the refs, and it works.
Yeah, he complains a lot.
Yeah, he's all over the place. He's bitching constantly, and it clearly works, especially at home. I think one thing, you mentioned the rebounding, one thing that's really impressed me this year is Jameer Young as a rebounder. And I think that's kind of flown under the radar. I think he's averaging like 5 or 6 rebounds a game, which is absolutely nuts for a guy that's like 6 feet tall. So credit to him. His hands are really good underneath. He's not afraid to mix it up down there. And to go along with Julian Reese and Dante Scott, who are averaging, I think, between 6 and 7 rebounds a game. I mean, that gives you 3 solid options there. But Jameer Young, in addition to leading the way offensively, averaging 18 points over the last 5 games, his ability both defensively and as a rebounder is really impressive. I think the other thing that stands out to me defensively, it feels like, and obviously they were good towards the beginning of the year, but it feels like in their half court defense, they're a lot more comfortable with what Willard wants them to do as far as switching off ball screens and things of that nature. They're not getting caught flat footed as much as they had been early in the year. And I think that's really helped. Their transition defense was excellent yesterday. And it's one of the reasons, I mean, Michigan State doesn't like to run a ton this year, but when they were getting out into space, they were closing down pretty quickly. So that's been impressive to me. They're playing with more confidence on the defensive end, flying around a little bit more, but doing it in a controlled way where it's working. And Julian Reese has really impressed me. We just mentioned him a little bit. Yeah. I mean, that's been, to me, probably the biggest development over the last 5-10 games is the confidence that he's playing with. And I don't know who got in his ear, what finally got through to him, but he's playing with a ton of confidence. He's dunking the ball instead of trying to lay it in. He's just asserting himself down low and using the size that he has in a way that he should have been all year. So that's been really good to see. He still gets into way too much foul trouble. He gets ticky-tack fouls called on him more often than other players, and I'm not sure if it's something to do with his hands or his footwork, something that can be worked on, but it's been really impressive. He's averaging 12 points and 6 rebounds over the last 5 games, and if they can keep him playing with that sort of confidence, and he's not just doing it at the rim, he's making some jump shots, and his free throw shooting has gotten better as the year's gone on. So hopefully we continue to see more of that. That's going to be crucial down the stretch for Reese.
Yeah, and Grant Billmeyer, one of the assistant coaches, in fact, the one that came from Seton Hall with Willard, is known for developing big men. And we were wondering, okay, where's that development with Reese? And we know the foul trouble was an issue that you can't get experience and can't get better when you're not on the floor. He's still getting into foul trouble, but he's managed it well. And he has certainly developed and played a lot better. Again, I thought some questionable calls. He certainly doesn't seem to get the calls from the refs or the 9 calls from the refs at times, I think, where he should. And he's trying to establish himself in a physical league. I don't understand, again, a couple of the calls last night, but it was a road game at Michigan State, right, where the Spartans are going to get the benefit of calls, especially with Tom Izzo there. And I went back for a second to take a look at when I talked about rebounding for the Terps. We talked about that, thinking it was going to be an issue for them this year. So they came in to the game yesterday or on Tuesday night. Obviously, people are listening to us at various times, so I don't mean to confuse folks. We're recording this on a Wednesday, so it's last night for me. But for on Tuesday night in the game against Michigan State, so they came in having played 23 games at 16-7. Well, that's 23 games. 15 of those games, Zach, they had out-rebounded their opponent and were 12-3 in those games. Well, now make it 12-4. But that's amazing. I never would have thought that coming into this season that they would have had 15 of their 23 games, they would have out-rebounded their opponent there. So that's that's certainly impressive. And again, that's no guarantee you're going to win the game. There are other statistics obviously involved in that, but they've obviously used it to their benefit. And last night, though, was one of those examples, though, where they out-rebounded Sparty by 1, but they still lost the game.
And another thing I'll say about Billmeyer, credit to him, one of the other underrated developments of this year has been Patrick Amelian. I mean, he's played more minutes than you probably would have liked because Julian Reese has been in foul trouble more than you would have liked. But they're putting him on the floor at the same time as Reese, having him play the 4 at times. And he's really held his own. He had some excellent offensive sets last night against Michigan State. And hit some crucial free throws down the stretch as a big man, which is always nice and always good to see. And he's been very good defensively. There were a couple instances where he didn't close out on shooters quickly enough yesterday, but for the most part down low, he's been really solid and is providing a really good option. And I don't think anybody expected this sort of play out of him. So credit to Grant Billmeyer for coaching him up. The other thing that has happened in the last couple weeks is Dante Scott becoming more aggressive down low and getting into the paint. And it seemed like earlier in the year, you know, he had slimmed down his body. He wanted to become more of a catch and shoot guy from the perimeter. Well, that wasn't working. So now he's more likely to drive, post up from the perimeter, go to that hook shot that's been his bread and butter for years. And that's been really good to see as well. So it's nice to see the development. It's nice to see them kind of leaning into their strengths a little bit as we head into February and March. And hopefully that translates, because the schedule sets up pretty well the rest of the regular season. Really, the only big test is going to be next Thursday against Purdue at home. Other than that, I mean, you look down the schedule at Penn State, Nebraska, Minnesota, Northwestern, Ohio State, Penn State. That the two road games to end the year, Ohio State and Penn State, won't be easy. But for the most part, you look at that schedule and you feel pretty good about your chances heading into the Big Ten tournament, get a decent seed and then see what happens. But Mike, I guess to finish this off talking about the basketball team, you know, we're starting to look towards March, look towards the NCAA tournament. Is there any question in your mind that this is a tournament-ready or tournament-worthy team?
No, I don't think so. I mean, they built that resume, and, you know, barring any major collapse, I certainly think that this is a tournament team. I think they've proven that. Again, certainly you'd like to see them step up their three-point game just a little bit, but they may end up being – they are who they are, and that's still been really good this season. And, again, to have gone into Purdue – in one of the toughest environments, to take that down to the very end, to go into Michigan State and to take that down to the very end as well. They've proven that they can play in the toughest environments and play with just about anybody in the Big Ten. And you talked about the favorable schedule for the next five at home. Now, Penn State has been a team, both home and away, that has been an Achilles heel for this Terrapins team. They've had struggles, especially on the road against Penn State. So those are two games that you hope, and it's a new season, different players, and you know, every year needs to stand on its own. But still, that seems to be something that lurks around this program. But you do have a new head coach, and that's a big factor. So maybe you hit the reset button with that. But no, this is a tournament team, again, barring any major collapse. But even then, with the resume that they have, the wins that they have, the resume that they've built, I certainly think says a lot about this team in a very difficult conference. And even though you've only got three ranked teams, and it was two last week, it shows there's a reason for that, because they're beating up on one another. And, you know, a big injury to one of Rutgers' starters, who's out for the rest of the year with an ACL injury. So that alters things. We saw Indiana beat Rutgers. So now Indiana's tied for second as of Wednesday, as we record this, in the Big Ten behind Purdue. And then there's a bunch of teams at 7-5 and 7-6 in the Big Ten.
Yeah, and that double bye in the Big Ten tournament still in play as a top four seed. I mean, there's no reason.
How about this?
Yeah. That's another thing that I just want to bring up and talk a little bit about is the preseason expectations and then the current reality. And it seems like, you know, the preseason expectation was what? NCAA tournament bubble team. At like kind of a best case scenario was like bubble team. And it seems pretty solid, barring some sort of last month collapse, that they're going to be in the tournament solidly as a 7, 8, 9, maybe 10 seed, but probably 7, 8, 9, something like that. So pretty clearly exceeding expectations, you know, and say they finish the Big Ten between 3 and 6, 7. I mean, to me, that tells you you're slightly ahead of schedule as a program. And that's just going to help you going into next year as far as recruiting and getting transfers in.
Yeah, and you can't, I guess we can't underestimate defense. And you talk about it, and defense can travel, and we don't turn over the ball much. Defense can keep you in games. It gives you a shot. But as we talked about some factors that we did not expect this team to be or to have as much success rebounding as they have. And again, that has led to, or certainly helped in, a lot of wins this year for this team. We didn't know about Jameer Young coming from Charlotte. How would he adjust to the Big Ten, to a Power Five, and the physicality? And he has been such a huge pickup in the portal. I mean, he's been one of the best portal pickups, I've got to think, in Power Five ball we've seen this season, and certainly in the Big Ten. So that's been a big factor. We've seen the development of Julian Reese as of late. That's played into it as well. And just trying to think with any other areas that we were talking about. I think as you talked about, you know, defensively, they've gotten into a comfort zone with playing, you know, zone and then falling back to man or vice versa and switchers and such. And they do seem to be good with that. And then the other aspect of it as well is that with offensively, you know, they started out wanting to be a chuck and duck 3-point team, but they've had to adjust realizing that they're not getting it done there enough. And then they need to attack the basket. And so they've done a good job in the half court of doing that. And that's all, you know, that's all played out. So you could say that, you know, we didn't give them enough credit at the beginning of the year, if you want to say that, but they're either overachieving or they're fulfilling the potential that they've always had that we just didn't see maybe through colored glasses or tinted glasses, however you want to say it, colored glasses before the season started, clouded glasses, whatever.
I think one other really impressive and refreshing thing to me has been the adjustments made by the coaching staff on a game-to-game basis. Doesn't seem like we saw that as much as we needed to with the previous regime. But you look at just the last two games. Against Minnesota, you knew they were shorthanded. They were going to play pretty much entirely zone defense. So we saw Mark Turgeon's teams typically had massive problems playing against any sort of a zone. Willard came out and basically said, we're going to run so fast, we're going to move so quickly in transition that you're not going to have time to set up your zone. And we're going to get off quick shots. And they beat them by, what, 30, 35. And then last night against Michigan State, you knew they're really solid defensively. And they were giving them the three-point line. But what did they do, especially in the second half? It was all those backdoor cuts. And that was really good, especially against a disciplined defense. They're able to exploit some sort of weakness that they saw, and they're able to work the ball into the post and then hit some backdoor cuts for some easy baskets. So that's been really impressive to me. And they do it defensively as well. As you mentioned, mixing up zone and man, that's been really nice, keeping opposing offenses on their toes when they're in their half court. So that's been nice. That's only going to continue to get better as Willard is here for multiple months, years down the road. But that's been really nice to see and definitely refreshing.
Look, adjustments matter. And within a game, they certainly matter. You know, you talk about in football, you prepare all week a certain way for a team. And at times, it's tough to just completely change what you haven't practiced to adjust in the second half. Some teams can maybe pull that off better than others. But in basketball, more games, and you've got to be able to adjust more and be more flexible because of the amount of games you play and such. And they've certainly done that. And that that matters. And I think you pointed out all astutely the things that Maryland has done. And, you know, again, Kevin Willard has been a very good hire for this program.
Yeah, so switching gears quickly, you mentioned football, so let's switch to football. Not a ton to talk about this time of year. Spring practice hasn't started yet, but we did just finish up the freshman signing period. National Signing Day has come and gone. Maryland's freshman class set. Currently, 24/7 Sports ranks their freshman class as the 36th best in the country. Their transfer class right now is ranked 16th. 16, combined, yeah. They're saying 32nd.
Okay, so, I was wondering if there was a combined number. I hadn't seen that, and I figured somebody had to have been doing that because you should get a combination there because that they're all playing together. They're all going to be on the same team there.
Yeah, so obviously still some movement. There's still some transfer targets out there, but 32nd, to me, and I know we talked pretty in-depth about a month ago, you and I, about football, but when we looked at the recruiting class as we headed into the bowl game, they were ranked, what, 50th, 60th in the country? Right now, as we're sitting February 8th, 32nd, to me, that's pretty impressive despite missing out on Nicholas Harbor, the five-star athlete who would have played tight end. He's headed to South Carolina with presumably a massive NIL deal that
he's
Oregon.
He's not headed to another Big Ten team. So that's, I mean, Michigan was true. Him so that if there's a glass half full takeaway, there's one of them.
Absolutely. And Oregon was in the running as well. Phil Knight apparently ponied up a ton of money, got him to commit the night before, and then somebody at South Carolina ponied up even more. So obviously Maryland was never going to be in the running seriously if that was the main consideration. They did land one of the Harris twins, Michael. It's a little strange to me that it was always assumed that they were a package deal. The other one's going to UCF, both four-star inside linebackers. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes in the next few years, because that's a situation you look at twins. One of them or both of them may be in the portal in a couple of years to try to play together again. But we'll see. For now, they have one. And 32nd in the country, Mike, to me, that sets this team up pretty well next year. I mentioned it a while back. I thought next year would be kind of a retooling year. But you look at the 32nd ranked class. You look at Talia Tungavailoa and Jayshon Jones, as well as a few other guys all returning. And it seems like this team may be able to do better than we initially thought next season.
Yeah, and I think one of the outlets had the over-under on the Terps win total at 7.5 for next season. And I think that's fair. Look, we've talked about with recruiting classes, and now that you have the portal, you really can't, in my mind, you can certainly break down both, and both are broken down with individual numbers, but they're all in the same pool, ultimately, and that is on the Maryland roster. So we can sit there and say, hey, look, you know, you'd like for the high school freshman classes to be a little bit better in terms of that number. If Maryland's going to, you know, make a push and stay competitive, that they maybe need to break into the under 30 threshold there, where they're, you know, at 29 or in that, you know, somewhere between 25 and 29 on a yearly basis. But look, 32, 33 overall, when you combine the transfers, at the end of the day, though, you know, given the history and all that, and given NIL now that has made it that much tougher for Maryland and the academic standards, that's a really good number. The ceiling isn't too much higher for Mike Locksley now, given the NIL situation. If you didn't have NIL, I'd say, yeah, he needs to, you know, once every 3 or 4 years, break into the top 30, top 25. But given the current landscape, which isn't going to change anytime soon, if he can be, you know, right around 30, 31, 32, 33, you'll take that. And he did an excellent job in the transfer portal. So all in all, I think you got to say that, look, if Maryland can maintain a consistency here with the transfer portal and the high school recruits, that they should be in pretty good shape for years to come. But, you know, that still ultimately has to translate on the field in terms of chemistry and such. And the one issue that is an issue for Maryland and every other college, though, Zach, is, okay, how long do these guys stay? You know, to build chemistry and continuity, that's tough if you've got some key guys leaving after one or two seasons. That is the new landscape. And I guess the best you could do is just bring as talented a team as you can onto your roster and hope that you got enough to stick around. But it's really, and I think you'd agree with me to a large degree, it's really a year-by-year basis now. You know, it's tough to project too far out. I think the most that you and I would project is 2 years because of that transfer portal and knowing that there's going to be turnover. But to your point, look, Maryland, if they can pull off another 7-win season, get to a bowl and hopefully win that bowl. But if they get to another 7-win season and get to a bowl game, that'd be 3 straight years now. And that would be a huge accomplishment. And it's important that Mike strings together now having winning seasons and bowl eligibility to continue again to build that resume. He did it 2 seasons ago. Great. Could he follow it up? He did. But I think you and I both know he needs to put 3 or 4 together, and that'll make it easier outside of the NIL and the academic requirements that you have to deal with. When you could go into a household and say, look, we've done it now. 3-4 consecutive years of at least 6-7 wins and bowl eligibility, that helps. That helps a lot.
No doubt. And I think the year-over-year turnover puts a big emphasis on coaching and having a coach that can manage a locker room like that. And to this point, Locksley's been able to do that and have those key contributors come in every year. The other thing is that something that Loxley said is, even though you may not get a kid his freshman year, he maintains those relationships, and you're seeing a lot of the transfers come in that are from the DMV.
Yes.
So, you know, you may not get a guy, and I'm not saying Nicholas Harbor's going to end up in the portal, mm-hmm. but if it doesn't work out for him at South Carolina and 2 years down the road he's in the portal, you know, where's one of the top places that he might turn? So anything like that, you may miss out on a guy his freshman year. He may chase some NIL money, and then things don't work out, and he's looking for a place to call his home. And what better place to do that than where you grew up? So that's the sort of the landscape that we're looking at now. And Mike Loxley, to this point, to his credit, despite Maryland's NIL shortcomings, has been able to navigate it pretty well and still field very competitive teams and grow the program through all of that. So that's very impressive.
Yeah, and you'd hope that with more winning, more opportunity for NIL comes down the line. And again, work has to be done to help from the administration to that regard. But I think to your point, and we have talked about in previous podcasts, that especially with DMV players, if you're Maryland and you finish in the top three or the top two of a player's choices and he ends up going somewhere else other than Maryland, you're right. You don't write that kid off, because there's still a possibility that that kid's going to come back. So if you land in the top three or four as the final choices, that still ultimately could be a win for you down the line. And that, again, that's the changing landscape. So it's almost like, okay, we finished a runner up, but you got to put a hold on that, because you can't completely write that off or dismiss that. That very well could be a win. And I think as time goes on, we'll have to see, okay, of the players from the DMV that we lost out on, that we were in the, you know, in the running at the end of the final two, three, four teams. Okay, what percentage ended up, you know, transferring to Maryland at some point? It's going to take a lot of time to see that number. But once we start to get that number, then we may have a better idea projecting years down the line of, okay, yeah, we lost out on these guys, but based on the history, there's a probably 20% of those guys will end up at Maryland in the next year or two, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
You're a numbers guy. You know, we can run, we can run the numbers on that, you know, maybe
absolutely.
Line if we're still doing this.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth looking at, and I think it's a good point. And we'll see, because they still have opportunities now with the portal before spring practice and even into the summer to add to the roster. So we'll see. Definitely things to watch for. You still got an offensive coordinator spot open.
I was going to say, there's some coaching spots to fill. And I've got to think financially, they're likely to get somebody who's going to be an OC and a quarterbacks coach not have that as be two different positions. But they do have that fill. They also have a safeties coach to fill. And I wanted to bring up just quickly about that. And we didn't get a chance to talk about it, but it upsets me that Enos left a day after Tagovailoa announced that he was coming back for another season. Again, this guy hops around all over the place. These guys are ridiculous. He can't stay at one place for more than 2 years. Again, I never questioned his coaching ability, although I think his play calling was maybe average. I never questioned his coaching or development ability based on what he has done in the past. But I just think it's ridiculous that he jumped after 2 years and Tagovailoa is coming back. And then how about the defensive coordinator, Kevin Steele, who was a Maryland DC last year for 3 days, goes to Miami. And now after one season, he's at Alabama. I mean, these guys have no, we want to talk about the players. You know, how about the coaches and these assistant coaches? Forget head coach. How about these coordinators that they just jump around? I mean, do they not want to settle at least a little bit in one place for a couple of years? It's just, to me, after a while, it gets ridiculous. Like, why aren't these guys are never satisfied? They're never satisfied. You know, it just bugs me. I don't know why it sticks in my craw about it. You know, but to that end, final note for me, Chris Partridge is a name that I don't know if Mike Loxley was going after him or not, but Chris Partridge a few years back was a linebackers coach in Michigan. And he's an outstanding recruiter, especially in the state of New Jersey. Rashad Gary was one of his recruits. He ended up getting lured to Ole Miss, and I think he got elevated as a coordinator. He was a position coach in Michigan, so he was at least a co-defensive coordinator. So it was, and going to the SEC. So going to the SEC and getting a position bump up from position coach to coordinator, you know, Michigan was able to retain him. So he gets away. Well, he's now back with Michigan because Ole Miss shook up their defensive staff. Michigan was able to get him back. I'm just wondering, I hope that Mike Locksley made a stab at trying to get him, because you think about New Jersey, Greg Schiano, the great job he's done there in recruiting in the state of New Jersey the first time and now the second time around, and the proximity, obviously, in this region with Maryland. I hope Mike tried to get him because he would have been a huge asset to recruiting for Maryland. But he's back with Michigan now. So for the Mighty Blue, that's a big rehire for them.
Yeah, the Jersey market is something that they haven't really been able to consistently get. They had Henry Baker only for a season or two before he went to, I believe, the New Orleans Saints as a position coach. He was here as a DB's coach, and that's where he was originally from. But they really haven't been able to do that. So that'll be interesting to see if he chooses someone for that safeties coach or even offensive coordinator with those sort of ties. I haven't really heard much as far as names, especially for offensive coordinator, which is a little bit surprising because we are getting deep into February and the spot's been open for a little while now. So it's definitely something to keep an eye on as we enter spring practice. I know Mike doesn't want to go into spring practice without an offensive coordinator. And as far as I know, he's not planning on calling plays anytime soon. So he's going to have to find someone, even though it is his offensive design. He doesn't call the plays. So it will be interesting. I have to think Tagovailoa knew that Enos was gone when he announced he was returning.
You're probably right. I mean, that would have been the right thing to do. Hopefully he did.
I guess one piece of good news is the Miami defensive coordinator job was open, as you mentioned, Kevin Steele taking that Alabama job. I thought Brian Williams, Maryland's defensive coordinator, might get a little bit of look there. He's got extremely strong Florida ties with his recruiting. The Maryland's defense took a huge step forward last year, but they went and got somebody else. I think the Tulane defensive Tulane coordinator.
Was it the head DC? Coach? Yeah, right. It was the head coach.
DC at was he there for 1 year? And he was at Marshall, something like that.
He was Yeah, he was at Marshall, but I thought he just took the job at Tulane.
Okay.
And then just left for, you know, which that doesn't always happen, but you are going to Miami. It's a Power Five school, but you're going from head coach to, you know, defensive coordinator, but they obviously made it worth his while. Yeah, Lance Guidry is his name.
Yeah. Either way, good news for Maryland fans that for right now, Brian Williams is still on the staff because he did do an excellent job with the defense last year, his first full year calling plays. But the all things to watch for, definitely keep an eye on the transfer market and the coaching market as we head into spring practice. Spring practice fast approaching. It always creeps up on us. Basketball season, surprisingly, you know, March is not that far away. So it's all coming down to the wire here as far as spring sports go. And then obviously fall sports, the practices starting to ramp up. But before then, be sure to check out all of the articles up at BaltimoreSportsAndLife.com and join the conversation on the message board. And, of course, be sure to follow us on Twitter at TalkingTerpsBSL. For my co-host, Mike Popovic, I'm Zach Kiesel. Roll Terps.